If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. Rick Mon is locked and loaded on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yeah, Thursday, the 16th of May, Anno Domini 2024. This is TNT, today's News Talk. I am Rick Mon, the hostess with the mostess, and we're going to be coming at you live here, at least I am, for the next 2 hours. Aren't you a lucky, lucky bunch? Yes, you are. Leave us a comment in the live chat, tntradio.live, and just tell me how blessed you are and how fortunate you are to be able to sit and listen to me for a full 2 hours. Aren't you the lucky bunch? Or tell me what a chore it's going to be. Tell me how much you don't like me. Tell me how much you don't like little angry Irish people in black shirts that don't shave and have poor personal hygiene. I don't care what you think. Just stick it in the live chat and I'll do my level best to pick up on the comments during the duration of the show. And of course, what a show we have coming up. I said I wasn't going to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. It's an absolute barnstormer. Fingers crossed. Well, I know for sure we're going to be talking to Gemma in just a minute, but after she finishes her stint, Bernie de Haldevang hopefully will be joining me, beaming in from the UK, talking about what's happening over here. And then at the end of the first hour, of course, Basil Valentine, our political editor, and I will be chewing the fat, shooting the breeze, if you will, about things that are going on in the UK and a little bit wider afield. In the second hour, we have Kit Clarenberg, investigative journalist extraordinaire. He's currently based in Belgrade in Serbia. He does a lot of investigative work for the Grey Zone. We're going to be talking about this attempted assassination that happened yesterday. And I must admit, I was trying to get an update this morning. I thought he was a Croatian. I had it in my head, but he's not. He's a Slovakian. So I was looking up Croatian news and I couldn't see anything about this assassination. I thought, my, that fell out of the headlines pretty quick. And then I went, duh, it's not the right country, Rick. It's Slovakia. That's why you're not seeing any news about this man being shot, because he was shot somewhere else. So anyway, that was rectified. We're going to get an update on that one. And then to round off the show today, Stephen, the legend, the Aussie legend, Kelly, will be joining me. He is affiliated with Tony Nicklick, AFL solicitors in Sydney. Going to look at what's going on in Oz at this point in time. Haven't had an Aussie on here for what seems like an eternity. So we're going to rectify that one today with old Steve-O. And of course, I have to say this, he was my first ever guest on Locked and Loaded, my first ever guest on my first ever day. And he stepped in at the last minute to let someone else off the hook, who my first guest ever didn't show up. My first show was pretty crazy. I had to talk for half an hour on my own about Novak Djokovic and the Australian Open Tennis Championship. And then Steve-O dived in and saved my little Irish ass. He talked to me for an hour and a half. But anyway, that's TNT lore. It seems like it was an absolute eternity ago, and a lot of water has passed under the bridge, but Steve-O is still going strong. Now, what are we going to talk about today? Well, we have a lot on the cards here. I'm gonna set the ball rolling here with a sob story. Yes, a sob story to depress you and bring a tear to your eye this morning, coming from Ireland. I need my family here. It's very painful, says a migrant worker calling on Helen McIntyre. Oh, my Lord. You want help? And you're calling on the biggest incumbent numpty on the island of Ireland, Helen McIntyre? I need help. My family's here. It's very painful, says a migrant worker calling on Helen McIntyre to reconsider family reunification policies. Well, let me tell you this, migrant worker, you're in luck, because if a policy needs to be brought into Ireland that will destroy the country, Helen McIntyre is the person to do it. So if you're talking about opening the floodgates more and bringing your whole family in from overseas, Helen is the one to do it. Yes, if we can dilute Ireland down any further, place any more strain on them, piss off the general population anymore, Helen McIntyre is the go-to woman to make sure that happens. This woman has spent over a year alone in Ireland without her family and described her situation as very painful due to rules around reunification. Her name is Saritha Vincent. She lives and works in Wicklow, has described the loneliness felt by migrant workers separated from their families. She has a husband, a son and a daughter there in India, as her salary doesn't meet the minimum threshold. Well, here's a thought. let's put things in the balance, right? You got your husband, your two kids on one side, and you've got some money on the other. And effectively what you're saying is, I choose the money rather than my family. No, that's not the way life works, Saritha. There's a lot of people I know around the world who have had to leave their families and go and work overseas, and they can't go crying to the government saying, I'm lonely, I want my family here. If you miss them that much, if you miss them that much, get on a plane, get back to India, get yourself a job there, and you'll have your husband, lucky old you, and your two kids to go home to every single night, and you won't feel lonely. And if you think I'm being unduly harsh here, I'm not. You can't just come over here and say, I'm lonely, bring my family over, and put them where? If you're not even meeting the minimum wage requirements to reunify with your family, who's going to pay for your family to come over? Me? No, that's not the way it works. But anyway, I'm not being harsh, am I? I'm just being realistic. Hell's bells, if I cried and played the violin every time, I want this and I want that and I feel this and I feel that and I'm entitled to this. It's called life. And if you don't like it, change it. Change your life. Don't expect the Irish government and bloody Helen McEntee to go changing policies to accommodate you. That's not the way it works. Life doesn't work like that. At least not my life anyway. But anyway, I'm giving myself a sore eye. My left eye feels like it's going to pop out of its socket. So now's a good time to just take a break and welcome in the voice of reason, our very own news correspondent extraordinaire, Gemma Cooper, and we'll see what she has to say.
Abroad or at home, this is your news.
By staying silent, we are part of the problem.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I tell you, someone has what they call an itchy trigger finger here, but it's all good. Gemma, what do you think? Should she go back to India, or should the Irish government pay for her family to get their asses over here? You know, I'm paying for this, so be careful what you say.
Well, it's just that I couldn't stop laughing there, is that the sweeper cut you off mid-flow, and like we were both taken aback by that. So I was having a little chuckle before I came on air. Rick Munn silenced by the tech.
Brutally cut short, but it's okay. I've recovered. But this story, I mean, like, you know, maybe my delivery was a little bit harsh, but I'm tired of people feeling entitled. And it is a choice, isn't it? Life's about choices, Gemma. So you have a family on one hand, a husband and two children that you've been separated from here. I get she's making more money here. I get that you can maybe send more money home. But if you're tired and you're disillusioned and you're lonely, well, then get back to India and get yourself a job there. At least you'll be with your family. Why should we have to accommodate relatives coming over because workers are a little bit lonely? That's not my problem, is it?
Well, I was just thinking what would happen if this was an Irish person saying to the government that they felt lonely and they wanted solutions to their lives and they wanted help with things. I don't think there's any help withstanding or forthcoming for native people in their countries now with the global problem of mass migration. If you ask for anything from your government, you're at the bottom of the list. And would they be helping Irish people in the same way? No, they wouldn't. So this doesn't really... it doesn't add up in terms of what you're asking for. If an Irish person who pays taxes is asking for that, would they get it? No, they wouldn't. So it plays on a lot of factors, doesn't it? You know, there is the factor of white guilt, which is a thing. That's a real thing, you know, that white people are supposed to feel guilt for other people, you know, things that happened in the past. And also, you know, who pays the taxes, I think, is the main question here. These people paying taxes, you pay taxes all your life, should be the ones to dictate policy and what gets done. So, yeah, it's and money over your family. I mean, that is a choice that many people from underdeveloped countries have made and moving abroad, or a lot of people that work on cruise ships. Are from low economic income countries, and they never see their families. And the skewed idea that giving your children money and material possessions is better than being a role model and giving them love and being present is an inversion, because it doesn't make for a better society or a better world. It's skewed values, global values that people are chasing.
Yeah, indeed. And you know, you see in this story, I happen to have a good friend who lives in Uganda, okay, and his wife moved to Egypt about maybe 2 years ago now to earn a lot more money to send it back home again, doing various work in Egypt and God, part of me actually thinks she's been trafficked or they're not letting her home, but she's been away for a couple of years. She hasn't been home, sending money back to clear off debt and try and finish a little house that they were building. He misses his wife. They've got four kids. They miss their wife. What are they going to do? Write to the Egyptian government and say, hey, my wife's lonely. Can you bring us all over and stick us up in accommodation, give us a monthly income? They'll be told where to go, or vice versa. The Ugandan government, can you imagine if an Egyptian or a Rwandese asylum seeker came into Uganda and went to the president, Yoweri Museveni, who ousted Idi Amin, takes no BS, and said, excuse me, I'm lonely. My wife and children are over in Rwanda. Please bring them over and accommodate them. He'll tell you to get the hell out of the country. He'll probably put you in prison, Luzira Maximum Security Prison in Kampala, to name but one. That's not the way it works anywhere else in the world. So why should it work here? I don't know. It's just, I get the loneliness. I get that it's not an ideal situation, but suck it up. You're getting paid a fortune over here, comparatively speaking. So earn your money. Get your lump sum together and then go back to India if you don't like it, or pay for your family to come over and let them get jobs. I don't know, but this constant bleeding and begging and the bull out, oh, please. It's like Oliver Twist. You know Oliver Twist? He comes up to the dude at the table and he's got his little empty bowl and he goes, please, sir, can I have some more? 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 That's what we should be doing when these people get the bulls out, like Zelensky and co. I don't know. It's just a society of scroungers at the minute, and I'm bloody tired of it. That's just the bottom line.
I do think we have to be very careful, though, about how this story has been presented and how it's, you know, a lot of tabloid journalism is there for the clicks. It's there for the headlines. It's there to get your blood boiling, you know, and then the media, the mass media, mainstream media will present things, lamestream, legacy, whatever. It's still there. And it will present things in this very polarized way. It loves a story like this because it will garner reaction. It will garner debate and it will keep people engaged with their products, which carry advertising. So, you know, that is an agenda too, which is all part of this whole ongoing global issue of getting people's blood boiling, stirring people up and getting people to get returned to websites, buy papers to have their confirmation bias, you know, reinforced. So I think we need to sort of maintain a mocking, watchful distance on some immigration stories. Having said that, the top story I'm bringing you is an immigration story in Ireland, you know, because it is an issue that's not going to go away. And just to highlight what you've just said, Rick, is that there was a meeting last night of Fianna Fáil party members and senior cabinet minister for finance, Michael McGrath, last night said that the number of people expected in the Republic now, asylum seekers, expected to reach around 30,000 people. Well, that's a small town of people coming across the border. He addressed the meeting last night and he said that the number of people arriving in the Republic now, especially since Rwanda, actually, and all of the shenanigans surrounding that, the Rwanda bill in the UK, he said that the number of people has exploded. And they also heard concerns about from police, because we heard about the deportation figures yesterday of 50 migrants being sent back over the last 7 months from the Republic back to the UK, even though Rishi Sunak said now we won't take any more back from Ireland. But the police are saying people want to know that when we say we're deporting people, they are deported. We don't just say they're deported, that we can actually prove they've been deported. And also another call last night at this meeting, this Fianna Fáil meeting, that we need more safer countries, Ireland is saying, to put these asylum seekers, which we can't take if the numbers keep growing, back to. Where is a safe country? You know, we had people saying yesterday that UK wasn't a safe country. Where will we put them? Where will they go? So this huge meeting last night, but I mean, 30,000, the previous estimate was 20,000. New figures revealed last night at this meeting, 30,000. That's, think of a town with 30,000 people. All the infrastructure you need for 30,000 people. And the Republic is mainly rural, you know, apart from Dublin and a few other key places, that it's mainly a rural place, you know, with doctors' shortages, transport, all of those things. But the extra 30,000 is what's on the cards, according to Minister for Finance, Michael McGrath, last night.
And here's the thing. What have we been talking about for a week? Tent cities, shanty towns springing up in Dublin and around Ireland, people in tents because they've got nowhere. The government has ran out of places to put them. They can't even put them in B&Bs and guest houses anymore. They're fully taken up. There's only so many repurposed office blocks they can put them into. They can't put them in there anymore. So literally, they're handing out tents and people are being shuffled around from pillar to post, which is completely out of order. But they came here expecting A and they're getting B. So it's a little bit of a shocker here. But the point is, we've been talking about this as it stands. Now, lump in an extra 30,000 people this year alone. to put them where? Another 30,000 people living in tents or living in prefab type houses? I don't know. So linking it back to this story that this woman has made the claim that she wants to be reunited with her family. Well, she said she's got a husband and two kids. That's another three people. So, you know, add that in on top of the 30K, possibly if Helen McEntee decides to change the rules again, which let's face it, she may well do. And then you just have problem compounding upon problem. For a lot of people in the live chat at the minute, Gemma, and some people are commenting on this. So one comment in particular, Jack Guzzler Cliffy says, should an oil rig company pay for their workers and family to come and live on the oil rig as well, because the workers are feeling there? And of course, in principle, that's exactly what they're asking to do. And if there was the facility and there was the capacity to do it, maybe the money was there and they had somewhere to put them, maybe they could consider it. But it's not. None of those things are in place. So we're in this position here. And as you rightly said at the Fianna Fáil meeting, McGrath set up and said, look, we're expecting another 30K this year. And that's a lot of people to absorb into a system that's already oversaturated. So you know what it's like? You know, a sponge, when it's full of water, and you keep putting water on it, what happens? It just flows all over the place. It doesn't go into the sponge. That's what's happening now. People are flowing out into the communities in tents, and nobody wants to see that, Jim.
No, and it's not fair on the people that come in. You know, if there's nowhere to put them and you're living in a tent, the glamour soon wears off when it's a freezing cold Dublin night and you're by the canal. It's just not pleasant for anybody, you know, and uncertain as what's going to happen to you. You've been promised that this is a solution to, you know, a problem that you, an economic migrancy problem. You're going to go to this country and it's going to be okay. It's not okay. It's not okay to be shoved into a tent. It's not okay to be moved around, not deported, not have any certainty of yourself, even though if you know you're going back to the country of origin. It's just, as we said yesterday, I wish we weren't covering so many asylum seeker stories in Ireland now. It's becoming such a scratch record, also becoming massively apparent that it's unsolvable. It is unsolvable. Yeah, otherwise, it would have been solved by now, you know?
Yeah, and there is, and it's not, we're not doing this because it's something we love talking about or something that we look forward to jumping out of bed in the morning and getting stuck into this. It's because it's such a dominant story and it's affecting so many people, and the trajectory that's on is catastrophic, Gemma. It's something we simply cannot avoid. It's the elephant in the room, if you want to call it that, in terms of breaking news almost on a daily basis, which is a terrible thing, but it is what it is. Listen, we've got to take a little pause as per right now. You and I will talk again in the second hour about more breaking news in the UK and Ireland. In the meantime, got to take a pause and fingers crossed, Bernie de Haldevang, what a name, excellent name, should be joining me just after the break here on TNT, today's news talk.
TNT's Mark Morano.
Doug Burgum, Donald Trump, if you're listening, please X him off the list. Doug Burgum is a North Dakota governor. He claims to be a small-time governor, small town or small whatever governor, small state governor. He ran for president. The problem is, he used to work for Microsoft. He's personal friends with Bill Gates. Bill Gates gave him money to run for politics. He says nice things about Bill Gates. And on my Twitter account, at Climate Depot, you can read all about this. And he also, as far as I know, didn't object to Bill Gates buying up agricultural land and other things. He is clearly, Doug Burgum, all presentations aside that he's the small-time anti-establishment guy, you can't get more establishment than being personal friends with Bill Gates and taking money from him.
Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
The Net Zero Con will leave millions of citizens dependent on state handouts.
It isn't a theory.
It's an agenda. There is no climate emergency. On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, indeed. This is TNT. This is Locked and Loaded. I'm Rick Munn, and I'm very happy to be joined again by the awesomely named Bernie de Haldevang. I am blessed. I have some of the best named guests in the world here. I've got a guy called Ralph Schoelhammer comes on. Matsi Nielsen, Bernie de Haldevang. Bernie, How can you even function properly with a name as epic as De Haldevang? I want to change my name to De Haldevang. What do you think?
I've been wanting to change my name for that reason forever. It's one of the most difficult names to try to spell for anyone. But people have got used to it. People who know me have got used to it.
It's a great name. It's a great name, and it's good to see you too. It's been a while, actually, since we last talked, and I think it was about January. Bernie is a financier, a direct democracy campaigner, a libertarian, describes himself as politically homeless, and very importantly, I think we talked about this last time, a meritocrat. You believe people should get jobs, positions, and where they are in life based on merit, not based on who they know rather than what they know. Has anything changed since then, Bernie? Has your opinions on anything changed, or are you pretty
not
much
at all.
Still going along that line?
Yeah, not at all. I think if anything, my views on direct democracy have become stronger. I think it's the only way, even if it's a difficult challenge, but I think it's the only way for us to get through this, because I think people have to realize it's a long journey for some people, because I think their initial reaction is this isn't going to make any difference. You can't make it happen. The party system is too strong. And actually, I recently put on the internet under my Twitter handle, which is @guilt_elephant, a list of about 15 different points that I think we should be asking our prospective MPs at the next election as to what their attitude towards those is. And those are to do with freedom of speech, freedom of religion, views that we want those to be who want to be elected to be clear that we're never going to have another lockdown, that we're never going to have enforced school closures, that we're never going to have mandates on vaccines or masks or social distancing. And also that they agree that they can't give away sovereign rights as proposed under the WHO changing its mind constantly as to what it's called treaty. So that there is no, they have no right, government has no right to give that away. That has to be a matter for a plebiscite, has to be a matter for a referendum. So, I think it's interesting because if you take the party out of the system and you get MPs who are willing to say, we will defy the whip if it goes against what we believe or if it goes against what our constituents have given us a mandate for, that will eventually weaken the system. And you and I both know Andrew Bridgen. He is very behind this too and has seen that this is a workable way of moving forward. And the proposal that Direct Democracy are putting forward for MPs is that there is a loose party system surrounding those direct democracy candidates, which does provide some infrastructure, but it doesn't interfere. It has no whipping system. It's not, in that sense, a proper party. It's an association of people, but it gives the MPs the right to follow their conscience and to follow the mandates of their electors.
Here's the thing, okay? The last time, I'm looking at an old note that I had here from this year, 11th of January, actually, I think was the last time you and I spoke. One of the talking points was 2024 election year, okay? So they say a week is a long time in politics. Well, since you and I last spoke, it's what, 4 months now? So a lot of weeks have happened and a lot of water has passed under the bridge. We've seen mayoral elections happening recently. We've seen local elections recently. George Galloway was elected at Rochdale. The rise of the Workers' Party of Great Britain. We've looked at Reform Party, what they said they were going to do, how it didn't really translate into votes translate into seats on local councils. A lot of talk and kerfuffle around that. Listening to you talk, okay, and I'm behind what you're saying. Promises, guarantees, this will never happen again, schools will never be closed again, we will never go back down that route. Certainly, if you ask a politician to provide a guarantee, he will most certainly provide that guarantee, verbally anyway, especially in an election year. But reality is, we've seen our human rights and we've seen constitutions trodden underfoot over the last 4 years. So can you understand, I'm asking you this question because I'm trying to comprehend this myself. I can fully understand the huge skepticism and the huge amount of despondency that comes along with, you know, any kind of politicians and promises that are made, especially in an election year. Is there any way to nail those things down and make sure that they absolutely, should there not be a caveat written in to say, if you break this promise, it's 50 years in jail, breaking rocks in Siberia, possibly, would that, you think, tow them into line or make them stop making false promises?
I mean, I think if people come in as independents and stand for direct democracy, then with that comes the ability for a deselection or a withdrawal of that candidate if they break those rules. Mm-hmm. Whereas normally the party would protect them if they're following the party whip. Here there is no party. There are some key principles that you would want an MP to sign up to, which are some of the ones that I've just mentioned, which are they're in, they're sort of pinned to my timeline, so anybody can have a look at them. They're not perfect. I'm not a policy wonk or anything like that. So they're just my thoughts as to what people should sign up to. But I think under a direct democracy system, as you know in Switzerland, people can be recalled. It does work. And I've come on to this to talk to you about something quite different. But just before we get to that, I'm also working with a new country called Liberland. I might want to come back and talk to you about that separately. But it's a piece of terra nullius that evolved after the end of the Croatian, the last Balkan War, on the left side of the Danube, between Croatia and Serbia. And
I'm not trying to cut you off, but it's just we've got to take a headline break right now. So apologies for being rude, because I've a feeling we need to expand on what you've just said, and we don't have the time to do it right now. But 30 seconds, quick headline break, and then we'll come back in and we'll talk about what you did come on here today to talk about. I get very easily distracted, Bernie. It's part of my aging process. I'm very easily distracted, but we will talk about some of the fallout from the AZ business. And yes, I will hold you to that. We will get you back on again and focus in on this new country that you're working along with. But that's for another day. But please, listeners, stay tuned. Bernie and I will continue in conversation in about 30 seconds here on TNT, today's news talk.
Here's a little news flash.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a quick look at your TNT headlines. Russian President Vladimir Putin has received the red carpet treatment in China after touching down in Beijing on a state visit on Thursday. Russia's ambassador to the UN has slammed the West for its hypocrisy and for turning a blind eye to atrocities being committed by Ukrainian forces. And France has declared a state of emergency in New Caledonia as the island nation is plagued by deadly riots.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Okay, Bernie, I name-dropped AZ before that break. It's in connection with the story you're bringing to us, and you rightly said, well, I'm not sure if it was AZ or not. I suppose it doesn't really matter what the product was. It was what was done to this person in terms of a forced injection, maybe you could describe it as. What's the story that's on your mind at the moment?
So let me start it from the beginning. And the reason I raise this is because it really puts into stark relief what's still happening in parts of the NHS, despite the fact that these jabs have been largely discredited, if not by anybody else, even by the manufacturers, in terms of their effectiveness, if not necessarily their safety. But I think I'm raising it because I think people need to be aware that this is still happening and they need to be on the lookout. So I'm on a various WhatsApp groups, and one of them is a Christian one that strongly believes in our rights to self-determination and all those things. And 2 days ago, we had a message from somebody on that WhatsApp group, and I'm not going to mention names because it's at this stage wouldn't be right to do so, who said that he lives with his mother. She's 96 and has dementia. They live in Hertfordshire, in a very safe little village. They have security cameras on the door which films and records sounds of people coming and going. Carers come in once or twice a day to look after her while he's working, the son is working. At 4:30, somebody rang the doorbell and rang it twice, and then tried to call one of the brothers who have power of attorney for their mother on everything, including everything medical, which is registered in the GP's practice. And I will mention that. It's the Puckeridge and Standridge surgery. Mm-hmm. And So this person turns out to have been a nurse who is also a county councillor and is very pro the vaccines. And according to his Twitter handle and other places on YouTube things, he has lent his services post-retirement as a nurse to continue to go and vaccinate people. So he made a quick call to one of the brothers, which turned up as a missed call with that brother, and then let himself in. The video evidence shows that he was in there for all of 6 minutes. The brother rang the other brother and said, by the way, did you give access to this nurse to come into the house? And he said, no, I didn't. The brother I'm in touch with then rang the surgery and said, what's happened? Have you given access to somebody? And they said they weren't sort of conclusive about their reply, but they did say that they believed somebody had gone in to vaccinate her with a COVID booster. Now, she's had no COVID jabs at all and is clearly not allowed to have anything administered to her without the prior approval under the power of attorney registered at the surgery of one of the two brothers. So he asked the doctor at Puckridge and Standen Surgery, on what basis would you allow access to somebody? To which this doctor replied, if it's required, to which he said, what does required mean? And got no definition. He then returned home fairly quickly and spoke to his mother, who couldn't really remember what happened because she has quite advanced dementia. And he asked her whether somebody visited, and she said, yes, she thought so, and then asked her, had she been given a vaccine? And she thought she had. And then we were on a prayer group praying for her, actually, all together. So it sounds very sort of close. It was. There were many of us on this video prayer group. And so we asked him to roll up her other arm. She's left-handed. And so his immediate thought was they would have vaccinated her in her right arm. As it turns out, you could see the vaccine marks on the left arm, and it had turned into a knot. Now, she was... Before this jab, she was perfectly mobile. She walked. She was just, as a dementia person is, forgetful and couldn't remember what she was doing. So you could see the evidence of the jab, and clearly the surgery had confirmed that had happened. This brother then asked for the batch number and what type of jab had been given. That has not been forthcoming, and they've asked them to investigate. And he also called the police. The police so far, and I have got names of the police because in a way I sort of want to call this out, have refused to give him a crime number. Now, this is, lawyers I've spoken to say this is medical battery and assault. There is no way she could have given her consent. She has clearly, he videoed the conversation he had with her when he came back to ask her about what had happened during the day. So it's very clear that she could not have given informed consent. So this is medical battery and assault. Why the police think this isn't a crime is absolutely beyond me. The latest developments are that she, sorry, I'll just finish this bit and then you can ask me some questions. And then we might come back and I'll give the names of the police who are refusing to give this this crime reference. Immediately after the jab, sort of within hours afterwards, she had trouble moving her leg. She now can't walk at all. It's a direct result of the vaccine. She's completely lost the use of her legs. Now, he is an optometrist, runs his own practice. He's had to cancel all his appointments. He's now in sole charge of looking after his mother. He doesn't want her to go into any form of hospital to be treated because he's concerned about what might happen to her.
I'm sure. This story is pretty horrifying, and effectively what I'm taking from it is what you've just said highlights the fact that in the best interests of the elderly and the vulnerable, choices are being made that doctors and health authorities think is for the best for the client, but it's not. It's overriding powers of attorney in this case. It could be deemed as medical battery in this case, and the police are almost shrugging their shoulders to say, well, we can't see why you would view it at that. It's basically, if I came at you with a needle in the street and stuck it into your arm against your will, I would be jailed for assault and God knows what, maybe GBH, but if I've got a nurse's uniform on,
not that I dress up as a nurse at the weekends or anything like that, but if I had my nurse's uniform on and came at you with a needle and stuck it in you, well, then the police might say, well, she was just, he was just doing his job. So it's a bizarre one. And it also underscores what I'm hearing a lot of from the Scottish, I don't know if you're following the results of the Scottish COVID inquiry at the minute or not,
yes.
But it's horror story after horror story of how the elderly were abused and DNR notices were put over the heads of people in nursing homes. And of course, relatives weren't allowed in at that point. Remember, they were told you can't see your loved ones, you can't have any physical contact with them, you can't even come into the nursing home. God only knows, Bernie, literally God only knows what was going on behind those doors at the time. And I think this story that you've brought to our attention, thankfully, this morning, we'll find out more about it as time goes by. But as per now, we've got to call time on this one. We've got to take a little ad break, but we will talk again, hopefully sooner rather than later, and you can give us an update on this as well as that other project that you're involved in, if that's okay with
happy
you.
To do so,
happy to have you back again anytime, Bernie, and it's always a blast talking to you. That's Bernie de Haldevang, and you can find him on the X platform, as he's rightly said, at the oddly named @guilt_elephant. I'm always fascinated by how our guests come up with these names. Maybe someday you and I'll have a conversation about that one, but follow them on there anyway. Bernie, have a fantastic day. Hope to see you again soon. And I got to take a break now and bring Basil on. So we'll be right back. Pleasure. Be right back after this break on TNT, Today's News Talk.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go. I didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
Many pollution sources can affect the air you breathe. From power plants and vehicles to dust and wildfires. Knowing more about local air quality can help you protect your health. If you're thinking about buying an air sensor, EPA has a series of videos to help you get the most out of it. Learn how EPA collects and uses regulatory data, how EPA communicates health messaging, and how to interpret the readings from your sensor. Visit epa.gov/air-sensor-toolbox.
Informative and engaging.
Rick Munn
on Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, TNT, Today's News Talk. Brilliant start to the show. I'm enjoying myself here. Hopefully you folk are listening in. You're enjoying it too. Shout out to someone in the live chat for the first time, actually. I believe Ginballs73 says, love you, Rick. You're bloody awesome, mate. Looking forward to listening every day here in Oz. Long time listener to TNT. First time today chatting. G'day to all on the chat. So if you're still in the chat or you're still listening in, Ginballs73, welcome. And please continue to leave messages in the live chat and we shall do our best to pick them up as the show goes along. But now, very happy to be joined again by my colleague, my sparring partner, and my fantastic political editor, the one and only Basil Valentine. Basil, how's life?
Well, that's a great build-up, Rick. I hope I live up to it. Good morning to you and hello to our viewers and listeners all around the world.
Indeed. And, you know, you're on the hoof at the minute. I know you're moving around, have green screen, will travel. Your current location, is it any better weather-wise than Blighty?
Well, actually, we've had rain overnight and this morning, much needed in Southern Europe. Otherwise, the whole place dries up. So, when it comes to weather, Rick, I'm a tepid character. I'm a Brit. I like it not too hot and not too cold. And I don't mind a shower so long as it doesn't interfere with the cricket.
Indeed. And that's a shower of rain, by the way, not a hot shower with soap, because, you know, you can take that anytime you like. You can work that shower in and around the cricket. Yes. But
speaking
listen,
of
so
showers,
much. Yes, go ahead.
Go on.
No, I was going to say, No, right, I'm going to be quiet. You talk.
Speaking of showers, Keir Starmer has been speaking today, setting out Labour's priorities after the next election. And he says that if and when his party wins power, he is going to focus on growing the economy while keeping tax, inflation and mortgage rates as low as possible. What is crucial about these commitments, he said, is that they are part of a long-term plan to get Britain back on its feet. Okay, well, if Britain isn't on its feet, we have to ask ourselves why. Lockdown, long-term economic decline. Labour is every bit as responsible for these things as the Conservatives. There really isn't any difference between what Starmer is proposing and what Sunak is proposing. They've both been speaking over the last few days about this mysterious change element. Britain is going to change, but at the same time, Starmer is saying he's not going to change anything. He just wants to bring stability. So, you know, an abysmal lack of clarity and vision for the future from the pair of them, quite frankly. But one thing we have learned from Labour this morning is that pupils in England can learn about gender surgery, but not ideology. The Education Secretary is going to announce that new guidance will stop schools teaching children about gender reassignment surgery. So, you know, make of that what you will. You can learn about the surgery, but you can't learn why you might want to have it. Doesn't make any sense to me, Rick.
Do you know what? Here's a crazy concept. I don't know, if you've seen any pictures of the mutilations that are done on these children's bodies after they have the so-called surgery. Okay, I'm not going to go into details, but they look absolutely horrific. And to be quite frank with you, Basil, possibly if those photographs were shown to prospective gender surgery candidates, I'm telling you this right now, it would put a lot of them off having any mutilation done to their bodies. It is beyond sick, in my humble opinion, on how any so-called doctor could ever perform any kind of an operation like that on any other human being. To me, that disqualifies him immediately from the title of doctor. They should be renamed butcher at best. Butcher, like a Dr. Frankenstein type character, because that's what they're doing. They're butchering people, Basil, and it's absolutely horrendous. And I actually think it's a line that shows just how far that we have fallen as human beings, that so-called adults and doctors and health authorities can perform things like that on children in the name of health, mental health. In this case, it does nothing but destroy a child's mental health as well as their body.
Well, I can only agree with you, Rick, I must admit. And I think the sooner we bring out a ban on so-called gender reassignment surgery for anybody under the age of 18, I would even say 21 years of age, the better. It's as simple as that. Meanwhile, I'm learning politicians and election officials are being offered cyber protection ahead of the UK general election later this year. High-risk individuals are going to be offered support to help protect them from hacks by foreign spies. British government has spoken of a growing threat to democracy from people spreading disinformation and fake AI crazy content online. And also other states, notably China and Russia, apparently, attempting to interfere in the political process. Well, we've both spoken to Andrew Eborn this week. I interviewed him at length on the Patrick Henningsen show on Tuesday. And some of the images that can be created with AI to superimpose politicians in situations which they were not entirely fake is concerning, I would agree. But then again, there has to be corroborating evidence. If you're going to show a picture of a politician in a compromising situation, be it favourable or unfavourable, a single image won't be suffice. Unless, of course, you know, we accept that we're now in the age of rapid scrolling, Rick, where you might see an image of a politician in a particular way, and you don't bother to research whether or not that was actually the case. The fact that that image has flashed before our eyes, albeit briefly, is enough to colour our opinions. Very difficult to know what's real and what's fake in this election year where 2 billion people at least are going to be voting.
Yeah, one thing you mentioned there in that piece about the cyber protection for certain politicians ahead of the general election, that they could be hacked by maybe Chinese hackers. Why don't we apply their mantra that they applied us back to them again, which is not one that I agree with, by the way. But remember, we're constantly being told, Basil, you and I, that if you're not doing anything wrong, then you don't have anything to be afraid of, okay? So let's apply that back to the politicians. Don't worry about being hacked, Mr. Politician or Mrs. Politician. If you're not doing anything wrong and there's no compromising information or highly classified, divulgences within your emails or your personal messages, then you should have absolutely nothing to worry about. Surely that should cut both ways, shouldn't it?
I couldn't agree with you more. What about the rest of us? I think we're more heavily surveilled in Britain and the United States than just about anywhere else in the world. We seem to be very quick to point the fingers at Moscow and China, but I would suggest that's for geopolitical reasons rather than any immediate threat they pose to our democracy. Moscow has said there's no evidence for UK allegations of a digital spying campaign. And China has said that Britain has repeatedly hyped allegations about Chinese and spies and cyber attacks. On the other hand, there's a certain little country in the Middle East that seems to exert an enormous amount of influence over our politicians. And if you dare criticize it, then you're smeared out of politics. I think you know what I'm talking about.
I do. And, you know, even there were stories flying around this week. Thankfully, I was spared the torture of the Eurovision Song Contest. That's not something that anybody with any moral character or even integrity should be watching in the first place. But there was an influx of moaning and wailing and vote fixing and its degeneracy. And there was a push on to boost the Israeli entry. I don't know. Thankfully, I didn't watch any of it, and I muted that word from off my social media timeline because the amount of spam coming in about the damned Eurovision Song Contest was unreal. But that was also a factor in it. You know, a push to get Israel up the charts. Like, what if they had one? What accolade is that? Is that something you would ever boast about, Basil? Go to a dinner party and say, I was the Eurovision Song Contest winner in 2024. That doesn't exactly boost your credibility, does it?
It was the most extraordinary spectacle, Rick. A festival of fetishism is how I would describe it. A once home, you know, homely, very wholesome, if rather nap event has been turned into, well, quite frankly, the biggest television
Pervert's paradise. Pervert's paradise.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely.
Because I can remember. Do you remember Ireland used to win it a lot? I think Dana won it for Ireland and Johnny Logan won it. But do you remember at the time, you'll remember this, I think it was 1981, what was deemed to be highly racy at the time. I think Bucks Fizz won it for Britain with Making Your Mind Up. And I remember they came on screen and, you know, there was two guys and two girls dancing around, and halfway through the song, the guys ripped the little skirts off the women. I don't know what they were doing, and they were prancing around in a pair of leggings. That was deemed to be over the top and highly suggestive and provocative back in 81. Can you imagine what they would make of the events that are going on now in 2024?
That was innocent. I mean, the whole program of 30, 40 years ago was completely innocent compared to what it is now. The Irish entrant this year, Bambi Thug, describes herself as a goblin witch. I'm not, if she, that's what she wants to be, that's fine, you know. But presented a very, very different image of Ireland from the likes of Daniel O'Donnell and Dana. I can tell you, the whole event was replete with LGBT flags. I mean, that's the only flag other than the flags of the countries competing that was permitted. Interestingly, the European Commission flag was banned from the event, but you could fly an LGBTQIA flag. And at some point in the last 25 years, the whole event became extremely popular with the gay, aka queer community, and also with Australians. So for some reason, Australia, although their song didn't make the final, Australia is included in the Eurovision participants. And the whole thing became this sort of very camp parody of itself. On top of that, in the last few years, of course, you've also had these tremendously powerful political overtones. The United Kingdom did not get one single vote from the public. Truly bizarre. No one at all supported the UK candidate, least of all the likes of Tommy Robinson and Labour Friends of Israel, who were both urging on the X platform their supporters to vote for Israel. Robinson claims to be some sort of patriot, but he was saying, vote Israel, not vote Britain. Yes, you could phone, you could use various sort of dialing techniques to ring in so that you appeared to be from different countries. It wasn't particularly expensive. And through that, the Israeli entrant went from number 17. As soon as they got their public vote, they went up to number one. Well, they were subsequently overtaken by four other countries, including the eventual winner, Switzerland, of course. But it was totally out of proportion to the marks given by the judges and juries.
It's bizarre. And I suppose there's a story that I'd highlighted here that I wanted to touch on, possibly, if we got time. So let's just touch on this now. We're talking about Europe, a little bit about Europe. So this was something that was published in metro.co.uk yesterday, Algorithmic Ghetto. It's to do with the upcoming Olympics, I believe, in Paris. The French capital, Paris, will be split into zones this summer, with anyone wanting to enter certain areas required to show a QR passcode on their mobile phone. Now, of course, this is being punted forward as to protect people. It's done for security reasons. It's to make sure that you're safe while you're going there. But in reality, is this not just an extension of what we're seeing happening in Europe with these ULEZ zones, or Britain or England, for example? You know, Oxford, you can only enter and leave certain zones certain amount of times every year. So, you know, is this not just an extension of it? Any major event now could see a city zoned off that you can only have access with QR code swiping on your phone?
I think it's worse than that, Rick, because this is personal digital identity. This may be the forerunner of the Europe-wide digital identity passport that you will need to travel from one country to another. You know, Europe was supposed to be about freedom of movement. That's what the Schengen zone was all about. A hard shell on the outside, and an egg-like substance on the inside where you could swim around freely. Now suddenly we're seeing the introduction of these heightened technology-based so-called security measures. I don't like it one little bit. Of course, the excuse is that for a major event like the Olympics, there have to be appropriate counter-terrorism measures in place. But there's always an excuse for any infringement on civil liberty, isn't there? It was the same with COVID. I mean, the first time I saw these QR codes being used for access to any particular building or area was during the COVID farrago. Fortunately, that whole scheme completely collapsed on its face, effectively, as a result of, you know, technology malfunctions, the public's refusal to use it, and the fact that the whole thing was a psyop from start to finish to begin with. But nevertheless, they still want to try and get us digitized as much as possible. And as I say, I think this is almost certainly completely unnecessary. I'm not sure what exactly they're going to try and achieve by it, apart from this imposition of, you know, technology and identification, which is wholly unwarranted.
And also, Basil, it won't prevent any terrorist attacks. What it might do is it might prevent the location of a terrorist attack, or it might change the location of a terrorist attack, but it's not going to prevent the attack per se, because, you know, growing up in the Troubles here in Northern Ireland, we had terror attacks on a daily basis. And, you know, any terrorist, self-respecting terrorist that wanted to cause maximum carnage and destruction would pick somewhere that was a least expected target and strike at the most unexpected time. So you had heavily fortified army bases here in Northern Ireland, police stations, which were still attacked, but usually attacks came away from the fortified areas, away from the areas of high surveillance at times when we're least expected. So if I was hypothetically a terrorist, and I said, well, I can't get in and out of Paris during the summer because of these QR codes and heightened security, then I'll simply go somewhere where there are no QR codes and heightened security, or somewhere off the beaten track, and carry out my horrific attack, if that's the kind of low-life person that I was, which I'm not, of course. But what I'm saying is it's simply going to move the attack from one location to another. It's not going to prevent the attack itself.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, you know, QR code, you know, is a load of black and white dots on a screen. Mm-hmm. Surely if you wanted to identify people as they move from one part of the city to another, they'd be better off showing their passports. That's mm-hmm. got the photo of somebody on it. That's who I am. That's me. I'm going through there. Anybody can show a QR code that's faked or taken from somebody else. It bears no relationship whatsoever to the person that's carrying it, Rick.
I saw, just in closing here, I saw a little video clip a couple of years ago, Basil, about these QR codes, and it wasn't the ones that you would have on your phone. You know the way sometimes venues or shops wouldn't let you into their premises unless you scanned their QR code, and then that gave you a green tick or a red X in your phone? Well, someone decided that the way to override this is you take a black marker, black Sharpie, and you simply go up to that QR code and you put a dot on it somewhere. And as you said, it's just a jumble of black and white squares and dots. If you put just one dot on that that's not supposed to be on there, it screws the whole QR code system up for everybody out there. And of course, again, let me put a caveat in there. It's not something that I am advocating that people should do. I'm saying that that's something that I observe people doing very effectively to nobble the QR codes so they're not beyond sabotage. If someone has a black Sharpie and a little bit of dedication, they can override these pretty quickly. But listen, the music's playing. That means it's time to wrap this segment up. So massive thanks to you, Basil, for beaming in this morning and lending us your knowledge and these stories as you do every day. And I'm grateful for that. We'll talk again tomorrow, all being well. And I'll be back after the news with more Locked and Loaded. So don't go away. This is TNT, today's news.